Good morning. It is 10:04 a.m. on Wednesday, September 5th, 2018. I call this regular scheduled meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, joined by Commissioners Brian Krasius and Julie Fedorchak. So we have a quorum. I do not have any opening comments. Commissioner Krasius, do you?
I do not either.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Well, I'll just make one quick opening comment. I don't know that we've talked much about it, but back earlier this summer, there were filings made at the commission announcing each of the investor-owned utilities has to report on what percentage of the electricity sold to North Dakota customers was from a renewable source. And it was interesting how they're doing that now versus previous years, but because they're talking a lot more about the RECs, the renewable energy credits, because that's how all this stuff is being traced and marketed and sold, which is a whole different issue that I don't think most people even realize exists. But in Otter Tail, XL Energy, and MDU, it was interesting that they're just about 20% of the retail sales. XL is a little bit more. They're 22. MDU's at 20, and Otter Tail's at a little 18.5. So those numbers are continuing to creep up there, which I find interesting and noteworthy. Also, in light of the fact that today we'll be taking the first step on our very first utility scale solar application that we've received, so things are changing out there.
Okay, moving on then to the consent calendar. We have 9 items on consent plus approval of previous minutes, and I move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. RC1, I move the commission adopt an order in case number RC-18-226, notice of violation number 1801 issued to Dakota Westmoreland Corporation at the Beulah Mine to affirm the violation, assess a civil penalty, and close the case upon payment of the penalty.
Second.
During a June 27th mine inspection, our inspector noticed that topsoil stripping appeared to be less than 100 feet from a cemetery. A follow-up inspection was conducted on June 29th, and topsoil had in fact been removed within 85 to 88 feet of the cemetery. The Century Code prohibits surface coal mining operations within 100 feet of a cemetery. The remedial action consisted of respreading topsoil and seeding the affected area and clearly marking the 100-foot buffer zone around that cemetery. The commission now needs to assess Dakota Westmoreland a civil penalty and adopt an order in this matter because they did not request an informal conference or a formal hearing. The commission on these matters considers 4 factors in determining the amount of any civil penalty. 1 is the history of previous violations. 2 is the seriousness of the alleged violation. 3 is negligence. And 4 is good faith in attempting to achieve compliance. The commission may assess a civil penalty of up to $3,500 per day on the history of previous violations. Generally, the history of violations within the preceding 3 years is considered. And a penalty for history has not been recommended if 3 or fewer violations have occurred during that 3-year period. Dakota Westmoreland has received 1 other violation within the preceding 3 years. So based on the criteria we've used in the past, they do not have a history of violations that requires a penalty to be assessed in this case. The commission may assess a civil penalty of up to $3,500 per day based on the seriousness of the violation. And this violation did cause some environmental damage because a small area of topsoil was removed. A penalty of $500 based on seriousness is warranted in this case. The commission may also assess a civil penalty of up to $3,000 per day on the degree of the fault of the permittee. However, a violation that's caused by negligence but not through reckless, knowing, or willful conduct may be assessed a penalty of up to only $1,500 per day. Mining companies are required to mark the boundaries of all zones in the field. In this case, the buffer zone had not been marked in the field, so a penalty of $1,000 based on negligence due to lack of diligence is warranted. We may also deduct up to $1,000 per day from the total civil penalty when a permittee takes extraordinary measures to abate the violation in the shortest possible time following notification of the violation. No deduction can be made for normal compliance, which would be abatement of the violation within the time set for the abatement. So a deduction for good faith is not warranted in this case. So the Reclamation Division recommends that the Commission affirm NOV 1801 and assess a civil penalty in the amount of $1,500, which again is $500 for seriousness and $1,000 for negligence.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the Commission adopt the order granting request to discontinue business in Border Ag and Energy, facility-based grain buyer of Newburg, North Dakota, discontinue business case number GE-18-314.
Second.
We received a request from Border Ag and Energy to discontinue licensing its facility in Newburg. They notified us that this facility has been closed, it is empty, and there are no unpaid scale tickets or open contracts. Border Ag and Energy continues to operate facilities at Botno, Kramer, Lansford, Russell, Westhope, and Souris. So staff recommends that the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I will say not to go into all these towns, but Souris is one that I thought was kind of interesting and especially timely today. In the 30s and 40s, there was in the big band era, there was a nationally known band leader named Tommy Tucker that grew up there, was on prominent radio shows like Fibber McGee and Molly. Julie, I know that was always one of your favorite shows. But besides being a band leader, he also wrote some songs. His most famous was I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire, which was subsequently recorded by newer names like Frankie Lane and Susie Bogus, who is going to be in Bismarck next Friday the 14th for the Bismarck Mandan Police Association. So maybe she'll play that song.
I would say we're all absolutely for not setting the world on fire.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And RC3, I move the Commission adopt the order granting request to discontinue business in Central Valley Bean Cooperative, license number 1268, Fairdale, North Dakota. Discontinue business case number GE-18-315.
Second.
On August 20th, we received a request to discontinue business from Central Valley Bean for this warehouse at Fairdale. They notified us that they will no longer be conducting business at the facility. The warehouse is empty. There are no outstanding storage obligations. They continue to operate facilities at Devil's Lake, Lankin, Pesick, and Buxton. So staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I will add on Buxton, an interesting thing from the 20s, back-to-back governors, one from the Independent Voters Association. The next one was a nonpartisan leaguer. So complete contrasts there. Governor Nestis first, the IVA, and Governor Sorley, the leaguer, both grew up in Buxton and were back-to-back governors. And for those of you UND graduates, of course, the Sorley Bridge in Grand Forks on Demers Avenue is named after Governor Sorley.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Okay. I move the commission adopt the order in Bakken Link Pipeline LLC Crude Oil Pipeline, Williams to Billings County, citing application case number PU-10-218.
Second.
So this is an interesting project. This is a pipeline that the PSC permitted first in February of 2012, and then there was an amended certificate on in later in 2012 and in 2013, and the pipeline was actually constructed by Bakken Link as a crude oil pipeline. And then this year in June of this 2018, they Bakken Link filed a consolidated application requesting to amend the order that was for a crude oil pipeline to allow the transmission of natural gas liquids or Y-grade product through a 42 segment of the pipeline that was originally permitted as a crude oil line. So this project, so ultimately what this proposed order does is it just amends the original certificate to allow Bakken Link to transport natural gas liquids or Y-grade product through 42 miles of the line that was previously approved for crude oil. This is a project that ties into a different project that we permitted in June of this year, and that was 17 miles of new pipeline north of this 42-mile piece, and then 22 miles we permitted of new pipeline south of this. And so ultimately, this is all out in McKinsey and Billings, Stark and Billings counties, and the total line will move from the Oasis Wild Basin gas plant in McKinsey County. The Y-grade or NGLs will be transported on 17 miles of new pipe, interconnect with this 42-mile stretch of converted pipe that Bakken Link is seeking to convert through this motion today, and then continue on to 22 miles of new pipe to the Belfield gas plant where it will be processed, and then there's 5 miles of four separate liquid product lines that are newly constructed leading out of that gas plant to markets. And so it basically takes gas NGLs from the central or northern part of the Bakken formation down to a new gas plant, the Belfield gas plant, not new, but a gas plant that was existing that had more capacity, and allows it to be further processed there and then taken to market. And so it's basically no construction involved in this, just a conversion. And this order finds that the location, construction, and operation of the facilities produces minimal effect on the environment and on the welfare of citizens, that their facilities are compatible with environmental preservation and efficient use of resources, and that the project is of such design, location, purpose that it will produce minimal effects. So having looked over this, given an opportunity for comment to the public, and having received input and feedback back from the consulting agencies, I think that this motion is ready to go and this order is ready for approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just add one piece, that it's good to see this pipeline that was in the ground being put to its, you know, most efficient use. It really made for a nice new NGL line of a total of 85 miles, almost half of which was pipeline that was already in the ground. And so I really applaud the companies for working together to bring these components together and really make efficient use of the resources that are already existing to transport this product. We know there's a huge demand for NGL pipeline transport, and creative projects like this really help meet that in a way that it produces minimal effect, reduces environmental impact by using existing lines, and also eases the pipeline pipeline exhaustion that people out in Western North Dakota are feeling. So I think that this is a good project and will have be another piece of the puzzle for serving the needs out west.
Is there any further discussion?
I think for me, when I was looking at the project, one reality is that as the flaring percentages continue, the threshold requirement continues to increase. You can't continue to drill if you're an operator out in the Bakken for crude oil unless you're meeting your flaring percentage. So shifting the use of this pipeline from crude oil over to NGLs, in effect processing natural gas that's coming off of the wellheads, moving to the processing plant and then on from there, actually helps facilitate continued drilling activity in the Bakken because you can't have one without the other. So I thought it was interesting, the shift that continues to occur in Western North Dakota to capture more of the natural gas and keep the flaring percentages in check.
When I think of this case, I almost think of it as a Main Street initiative-like project in that using existing resources rather than just always just building something new and starting fresh. And so I think you hit the nail on the head. It's a good use of resources. Also very good that it's one less thing to add to further landowner fatigue and as well as the neighboring landowners' fatigue as well. So. Good project.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And my second and final motion, I move the commission deem the application complete and issue a notice of filing and public hearing in Harmony Solar ND LLC Harmony Solar Project, Cass County Siting Application Case Number PU-18-219.
Second.
So public hearing on the application for case number PU-18-219 is scheduled for November 1st at 10 a.m. at the Days Inn and Governor's Conference Center in Castleton, North Dakota. Harmony Solar LLC has filed an application for a permit to locate and construct a 200-megawatt solar energy conversion facility in Cass County. This is our first utility-scale solar application that we've seen in North Dakota. It's just northeast of Castleton, just a few miles. And it will connect with an existing Bison substation, so I think that the close access to the transmission line is one of the driving factors for this project, as it is with a lot of new energy electric utility generation projects. It's less than 1 mile away from that tie-in. This project will affect about 7 landowners. It covers 1,660 acres, and of that, about 300 will still be in production. And the capacity factor on this project is a net capacity factor between 18 and 22%. So that's interesting when you compare it to the wind capacity factors, which are a lot of times upwards of 50% in North Dakota. But we're seeing the cost of solar come down and the viability of these utility-scale solar projects growing. And so here we have a first one for an application in North Dakota. This project, they hope to start construction next spring with the goal of being operational in 2020. And its total cost is about $250 million. So this will be an interesting hearing. It's required our staff to really think through the whole solar issues, how they are different, how they're similar to what we already review, and what kind of good questions we need to be asking at the hearing to do our job correctly and make sure that we're effectively reviewing the exclusion areas, avoidance areas, all the selection and policy criteria that come to play in all of the siting cases, and get us the information we need to make a good decision on this and set us down the right path for future solar projects, which I would anticipate we'll get more of after looking a little bit more at North Dakota solar resources and how we match up with those in other states. So it's going to be a good time. November 1st in Castleton.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Regarding announcements, just a couple here. Our next regular scheduled meeting is not in 2 weeks as we would normally do. It is in 3 weeks. So just to emphasize that, 3 weeks from today, September 26th. And it's also a later time. It's going to start at 3 o'clock p.m. instead of 10 a.m. So, again, next regular scheduled meeting, September 26th, that's a Wednesday, at 3 p.m. I also will just point out the following day, on Thursday the 27th, at 10 a.m., we have a formal hearing on the Roosevelt Gas Plant Expansion Project. That will be at Teddy's Residential Suites in Watford City. With that, we will stand in recess and take questions from the press, followed by a short break, and then we will reconvene for the administrative portion of the meeting.
Thank you.
I guess you can go first, Amy.
Thank you. Wondering if you're hearing from any other companies about additional solar applications?
I'm looking at Pat. I haven't heard of any, and I don't know that we've received any additional projects in North Dakota yet.
And on the NGL line, do you have a timeline for when they hope to be operating?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me pull out that file again. Do you recall, Pat, anything on that one?
I can go get that. I can look at the end of this file.
Let's see here. I don't know that it said anything in here.
I suppose it's in that other case because it will revolve around when that pipeline is done.
I'm not seeing anything in the materials I have that suggests when they hope to have it operational, but we can get that for you, Amy.
Okay, thank you. And then was wondering on the Meridian filings related to the Davis Refinery, what's the next step for that, or is there any action that the commission's going to take?
Actually, I think that's on our admin agenda, so we'll be talking about that next.
Okay, I'll stay tuned. Thanks.
Yeah, I will go back to the one question. I have heard of another solar project. I haven't confirmed it yet, but it would be in the southeastern part of the state. And the reason I had heard, I was approached by a couple of landowners that apparently had a conversation, and of course I told them that I couldn't engage in any conversation, if it was a potential active or a case coming up. But I think more companies will look at potential solar facilities in North Dakota. I don't think it's a question of if. I think it's more a question of when. But it all hinges, for me, or not for me, but I think renewables really hinge on the ability to store energy when they're not actually producing electricity. And will it get to a cost-effective standpoint to where consumers will want to continue to utilize that energy when the sun shines and when the wind blows, they're producing? But what do you do when the sun isn't shining, when the wind isn't blowing? Because then you have to have a backup, and to ramp up our lignite facilities, it takes longer. So you need something immediate, and that's where natural gas has come into play in terms of generating facilities. But you really have to look at everything as a whole. There's not a singular unit that I think you can give an answer to when it comes to that.
It's interesting you mentioned the southwest portion being where you've heard about another one.
Southeast.
Southeast. Okay. Southeast. All right. The southwest, in looking at the maps where we have the highest intensity, the southwest is significantly better than the east part, as we always hear it referred to as the banana belt, but the capacity factors would be stronger in the southwest part of the state, but then you might have more restraints with transmission, et cetera. So it will be interesting to see where they fall and in the state and what the driving factors are there. The strength of solar is that it follows the peak. So when on a daily and a seasonal basis, solar is strongest at the peak in the summer, and so it can help shave the peak. And unlike wind does not follow the peak, and so it's stronger as a renewable because of that, because it can help meet the peak, even though, you know, when it's half the time it's useless because it's dark out. So that's the one thing that solar offers that wind doesn't, and somewhat offsets the lower capacity factors, I think, of the, you know, when you're comparing renewables to renewables. And yeah, the backup is the great issue with all of the renewables, and we're seeing that, you know, despite the capacity factors, they aren't providing nearly that much of the energy. They aren't providing half of it, even though they might have the capacity factor to suggest that.
I occasionally get mailings. I have a farming, ranching operation in the southwestern part of the state. I occasionally get mailings. I've probably gotten half a dozen over the last several years, and I'm trying to think of the company. I think it's a venture capital company looking to place solar in the southwest, but they're looking for landowners within a reasonable proximity to a 345 kV line.
Plus, I would think the ruggedness, you know, the terrain out west is a little tougher to put solar on.
It would be. There are some flats, if you will, once you get out of the breaks of the Badlands. But it's interesting. You know, there's movement, and I honestly didn't pay a lot of attention to those mailings until I joined the PSC. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay.
Well, when people hear that there's a solar project in Cass County on Red River Valley land, quickly think, wow, how could it be more cost effective to hand your land over to solar farm, which is going to be in use for 20 or 30 years for a lease, versus farming that productive land. So, but obviously they're paying prices that are attractive to the landowners, because they've got seven of them here who have signed up. And so it'll be, I'm sure that those types of conversations will be part of what the company tells us in our hearing.
Okay, we will reconvene at 10:40 for the administrative portion. Morning, it's 10:41 a.m., and we are going to reconvene for the administrative portion of our meeting. There are two items on consent. I move approval.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, motion is approved.
Mr. Chairman, if I might ask that the scheduling matter number 4 be moved up to a discussion matter.
We'll add it to discussion and then see whether we need to remove it from scheduling then. But it will be that topic will be number 3 on discussion.
All right, thank you.
Okay, so the first thing on discussion is Otter Tail's tariff submission. Does anyone have comments on that, or Pat?
Yes, I would like to talk about that a little bit. Every once in a while we'll get a filing by a regulated utility that is a tariff filing, but it may be mostly administrative in nature, not to affect any rate or affect any term or condition that would affect a rate for a customer. And, you know, the there's a provision that in our law that says that when a company files a tariff change that or a rate change, the commission may suspend it within 30 days. And in this situation, staff looked at it, and we thought, well, there really isn't anything but administrative changes here. Maybe this is the type of filing that we should allow to go into effect without suspending it. The question, the only thing that is that the company doesn't really get any notification that we're doing that unless we, you know, that's why I'm bringing it to the commission. Maybe we should have something, some way of letting the company know that we're not going to suspend their proposal. And is the commission, I guess I'm here to ask how the commission feels about that. If the commission would like it, the staff, we could notify the commission or, you know, give a memo to the commission about the filing and then ask the commission if staff could send a letter to the company to let them know, or maybe on a commission meeting, the commission could acknowledge that they're not going to suspend it. But if we do suspend every filing, then we do the notice of opportunity, and it costs money for publication and that kind of thing. So if the commission is willing to do that, in some cases, let a tariff go into effect without suspending it. That's the question.
I still am perplexed why this is really in the tariff, even when it doesn't impact anyone's rates or service.
In this situation, Otter Tail's tariff has class codes, and these class codes, that's what they use to bill the customer. That's what their computer uses, their computer system uses to produce a bill to a customer. And for whatever reason, they have those class codes in their tariff. And so now they're making sure that all those class codes will work with their new customer information system.
Should the class codes be in there to begin with as a part of the tariff, or that's wound up, that's how it was written?
It was the company's decision to do that. At this point, we haven't told the company that they should remove them or anything like that.
Right. It's something to keep in mind for any potential tariffs in the future in terms of... Well, it might be difficult, though, on some of those to not have that language in.
It's useful to the company, evidently, but it isn't a big issue for the commission.
There's full confidence that there's no impact to rates or service.
Yes.
You mentioned rates.
I also had an advocacy staff look it over too, and they told me that there was nothing there that would affect rates.
Well, I'm fine with moving forward.
And what would you like? Do you think that we should notify the company in some way that we're not going to suspend?
Yes.
And
that's nice.
And what form would you like that to take? Would that be a commission motion or a staff letter or something else?
Well, unless there's some precedent, I think it can just be a staff letter. In a case like this, unless there's some precedent that I'm not thinking of.
I don't know of any. I don't know if legal can think of any from the past.
I mean, when there's no impact like this, I think that would be fine.
I think the past precedent, if there's no motion, was a staff letter, but it includes the effective date so that both sides know what the effective date is.
Okay. I'm good with that.
Okay, number two is the tree and shrub mitigation specification draft.
Good
This is just a tweak, right, Pat? Randy had a small edit on the draft that was...
Randy's edit is not on the draft. That's your draft?
Oh, this is... Okay.
That's your draft
so
far.
So what's your edit, Randy?
Mine is, and maybe there's something that I'm not understanding why it's written this way, but in the replacement section, number one, this reads that landowners must be given the option to have trees and shrubs removed from their property, replaced either on or off the right-of-way. I thought it would be better if it said that they have the option to have them replaced on their property.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why we wouldn't want them really on the right-of-way, typically. But it just seems to me
I'm
to
fine
simplify
with that.
It to change it to on their property.
Sure. Makes sense. And then with that change, it's good to go out to the stakeholder group?
I think it's in a form that I'd like to hear their comments about it. Yes.
Okay, good. So Pat will just email it out to them and ask for their response by maybe it's 2 weeks enough time.
Seems like it should be enough.
Okay. Good. Okay. All right. Thank you.
And then number three in discussion is the Dakota Resource Council and Meridian Energy and EL. PC is
complaint.
Environmental. I can't think of
law policy and policy center.
Right. Okay.
Well, just to kind of review what's happened here and get us up to speed, the ELPC and DRC filed a complaint that the alleging that Meridian was constructing without a permit. And then Meridian filed a motion to dismiss that complaint. And then ELPC and the DRC filed a response to that. And then Meridian filed a reply brief to support the motion to dismiss. So those four things have happened. And then yesterday we got a filing of a cease and desist from the ELPC and DRC. So just looking at those and talking with staff, you know, there's a few different ways we could go forward, but I think at this point that it would be most efficient and it would expedite things and provide us with another legal analysis that I think would be really helpful for us if we asked the substantive administrative law judge to review this case and the briefs that have been filed and the arguments laid out and consider the law and all the facts and make a recommendation to us. It is ultimately our decision, so it would not be a substitute for our decision, but it would be a recommendation that a substantive ALJ could make and do so in probably a more efficient, expedited way with their resources and their ability to have hearing or oral arguments or whatever he so desires in coming to a decision. So that's what I would like to propose this morning as a next step.
I would agree. That's essentially the same conversation I had with Pat when we were discussing the matter as well. So I'm in agreement.
I am probably the odd one out here. I'm feeling that typically we have turned over to ALJs more procedural things. I guess I was ready to schedule a work session on this and discuss it and reach a conclusion on our own.
I don't know that a work session would bring us to a conclusion. I think it might be a longer legal process that would be required with potential hearings, etc. So I think that this could get us the legal analysis that could justify a conclusion at in a shorter order than I think might be necessary if we go down that path. And this is, in talking with our staff, the motion to dismiss is really a procedural issue. And Jack, maybe you want to speak a little bit more about that, if you feel like you can offer some insight.
Sure. The motion to dismiss, as well as, I guess, the cease and desist, and there could be a number of other motions that come in on for preliminary matters regarding the ELPC versus Meridian complaint. Those issues, if we, in following what Commissioner Fedorchak said, they are preliminary matters that may be better suited for an ALJ to make a decision upon. They frequently make these sort of determinations. While there are questions of fact related to it, these are heavily procedural motions in many ways as well. One thing, major benefit that I would say that taking that approach would be, although the other approach is certainly acceptable as well, I think, to legal staff, is I do think for the purpose of scheduling and notices and additional motions, scheduling is a little bit easier as well. So I think it would actually probably expedite the process a little bit, which I know there have been requests from the parties to do.
And ultimately, the decision, it's a recommendation. It isn't a binding decision. It comes to us.
I think we could very well wind up in a work session, but having this piece of information, the opinion, if you will, I think will be valuable.
Well, if we're willing to move forward with that, I have a motion that in front of you is to request the designation of a procedural law judge. So I'll go ahead and read that motion. I move the commission request the Office of Administrative Hearings designate the presiding administrative law judge as a substantive administrative law judge in ELPC and DRC versus Meridian Energy Group, Energy Conversion Facility, Davis Refinery Complaint, case number PU-18-223.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Nay.
Motion is approved.
Okay, well, we have one less scheduling thing, so that will hasten that process. Number one on the scheduling is biennial RTO update meetings. This is the meeting that we have had occasionally where in a given day we kind of split the day up and have MISO in for part of a day and SPP in for part of a day. And I don't remember when the last one we had was, but we've had kind of a long interval here. And Victor has, I think, been working with both of the RTOs on a possible date.
Yes.
Of December 12th.
That's correct. Both of them confirmed December 12th does work for them. The last time we did this, we had SPP up first in the morning at 10 and MISO at 1:30 in the afternoon. I think with the idea of kind of switching it up a little bit, we could just do the reverse if December 12th works for everyone.
It works for me, obviously, because we had talked about it earlier. But how about you two?
Oh, yeah, we held that one. Yep. That work for you, Brian?
Yes.
Just confirm, yep. MISO at 10?
So, yeah, we would do MISO at 10 a.m. and SPP at 1:30. December 12th was the date, and I think you confirmed that works for you as well, Jer. December 12th? I don't recall.
December 12th is a Wednesday.
Right. The hold was originally slated for 8:30.
What was that, 8:30?
On the 12th.
Oh, the hold.
A hold for the RTO.
The time is just how we've done it in the past. Yeah, yeah. I think we can do different times if you would prefer, but that's just kind of how we've structured these in the past.
Does that the rest of the morning and afternoon work for you?
Yes. Yeah. Either way will work.
I think the hold was just, we just kept the whole day free.
Yeah.
Okay, so it'll be December 12th at the times Victor mentioned.
Thank you.
Monthly budget updates and directors' meetings. We scheduled these, I think, last spring, kind of through the summer, and have now exhausted as far as we went on the calendar with them. What we were doing is starting out in that set of scheduling, trying to schedule a budget update and a director's meeting on the Tuesday before the last meeting of the month. I looked at the rest of the year, and starting out in September, the last the Tuesday before the last monthly meeting would be the 25th, and I have a conflict. So I'm going to ask whether the 18th or 19th would work for you, and then we can move on to the next three if we can find a date for September.
So say that again. That
would September 18th or 19th work for you, even though it's the week before the last meeting instead of the day before the last meeting?
I'm actually in St. Paul for my, so both those days, the 18th and the 19th.
Okay.
It's probably why they're free.
Probably. Shocker. Would the kind of early in the day on the 20th or 21st work? Is that your thing of the whole week?
No, I get back late on the 19th. Like midnight.
Would like maybe one at 11 and one at 1 on the 20th work for you? Are these plays days in play for you, Brian?
Yes, they are. I have a meeting at 10, but I should be wrapped up by 11, so that would...
Yep, it works for me.
Work.
So September 20. At 11 and 1. Okay, then let's jump ahead to October. The last meeting is the 24th. Would the 23rd work for each of you? It does for me.
What time on the 23rd, Randy?
I don't have a time specified.
Would 10 o'clock on the 23rd work for you two?
Remember, we have like two one-hour, typically one-hour meetings here.
10 and 11?
Sure.
On the 23rd, I've got the Upper Great Plains Transportation Institute. Wait. It's not till later. So what time are you thinking?
Brian had proposed 10 and 11.
Sure.
Okay, and then in November, our last meeting is not on a Wednesday, it's on a Tuesday. I suppose on Thursday is Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So would Monday the 19th work for you?
Sure.
Yes.
My preference would be if we could get these in the afternoon, but I can do morning.
I'm open
one
that
and
day.
Two or two and three work for you guys?
Sure.
Yep, that's fine.
Okay, so November 19th at 2 and 3. In each of these cases, we'll have the budget discussion first and then the director's meeting to follow. And if we could do one more, December, our last meeting is scheduled for Wednesday the 19th. So would Tuesday the 18th work?
Sure. We should probably schedule our staff Christmas thing, too.
Yes.
That'll work.
Yes on the Christmas thing or yes on that day works?
Yes on both. I'm big on Christmas.
Do you have...
Anybody, that might be a good day for it.
Anybody have a time preference on the 18th? Oh, you think of doing both?
Well, if we did it like 9 and 10, and then we could have the Christmas thing at noon. Unless we want to have it later in the week. We can schedule it the next time, too. We don't have to do that now.
Well, why don't we schedule it for 9 and 10, and we'll save that option.
Sure.
And let's
just put it in. We can always switch it.
Well, let's think about remote staff and what the best time... I mean, if we get later in that week, it gets too close for Christmas, so I'm even thinking, like, I don't know, 13th or... What day is best for the remote staff or Christmas stuff?
A lot of times, some of our inspector staff people are in on Thursdays.
Right.
That's the day.
Yep. So December 13th is not a bad day.
The 13th would work for me.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
Good.
You too, man?
Yep.
Okay. Surprise accomplishment.
That's the most exhausting part
as
of being the commissioner.
We're on the December page of the calendar, we might as well, huh? Okay, and then the...
And Randy's in charge of games.
That's for next summer's thing.
That's going to have to be added to the next meeting, a discussion matter. It's not an easy subject.
Emmons Logan Wind, there's several cases here with the transmission line and the wind farm application.
There's two cases, and we were thinking of doing a combined hearing for the transmission line and the wind farm. And I could toss a date out there, November 16th.
That one works for me.
That is a Friday?
Yes, it is.
And where is it? Where would this one be?
Probably Lenten.
What was the date, Jerry?
Is the 15th a possibility, Jerry?
15th is not so good.
Jerry, I didn't hear that. Did you say not good?
Yeah, not good. It's
That 16th, I have a potential conflict, so I'd rather not do that one.
How about Halloween?
Nope.
I saw on there that you were scheduled for something on Halloween. If we...
What are the other potential dates, Jerry?
The 26th.
Of October?
Of November.
November?
That's after the Monday after Thanksgiving.
I could.
Randy is having a problem that day.
I could.
On the 26th, I think I can.
I can.
The 16th was preferable, but I'll move my 26th thing. November 26th.
Okay, sounds good.
And you're going to find a location, and I'm assuming Linton would be the town?
It's either Linton or Napoleon, and I'm thinking if you need a location, it probably ends up being Linton.
Well, we won't need one until we notice it.
Yeah.
But it's good to get the hold on there.
Yeah, we should... I've not looked at that map that closely to see if one of those towns would be much more logical than the other, but...
Yeah, they're both a similar distance, I think, away from the wind farm.
Okay, we'll get that figured out as we go, but we'll schedule for the 26th then.
Okay.
Is there anything else to add to scheduling? No. I wanted to just point out for scheduling that in the motion earlier on the regular part of the meeting, we, through that motion, scheduled the Harmony Solar hearing mm-hmm. for November 1st, so make sure that's on your calendars.
Well, they'll have to get it on.
Anything else?
Not for me. No.
Okay, we are adjourned.